In 2 weeks, it will be a decade since the disaster in New Orleans caused by Hurricane Katrina. Remember this song as sung by Native son Aaron Neville.
What has happened down here is the winds have changed. Clouds rolling from the north and it started to rain. It rained real hard and it rained for a real long time. 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline.
All that water caused $135 billion in damages. Killed more than 1,800 people, left 80% of the city of New Orleans flooded. I remember a conversation I had with just one reporter who was there at the time. His name was Dan Verbeck. He was working for a radio station in Kansas City, KMBZ, and had gone to help their sister station, WWL, in New Orleans. And when he got back, I talked to Dan about a night he was on that radio station in New Orleans with the news director, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were taking phone calls.
I don't think too often anyone will get a call at 3 or 4 in the morning from a woman who gives her address, and the news director is with me, and he knows the location, and the woman says, I'm in water in my house up to my chest. We ask, is anyone else with you? Yes, I have 3 babies. One of them is running a fever. Can you save our lives? Can you, with great dignity, can you save our lives? She asks, and what can we say except, can you get out a window? Can you get to the roof? There are a couple of men in the house with you. Can they pass the babies up to you? Do you have any water? No, don't have any water. The New Orleans sun is about to come up in a couple of hours, very hot on a roof. Don't have any water. Do you have any fluids? I have some milk. Oh, no, I gave the milk to the baby with the fever last night. Well, if you can get to the roof, take a bed sheet and wave it at any sound you hear. At this point, if she ever made it, Paul, she may have been one of 1,000 people up on roofs at that time, and I can only guess that she probably perished.
Can you save our lives?
Can you save our lives?
That was Dan Verbeck, who is a reporter for KMBZ in Kansas City, who was down in New Orleans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. My next guest was also a reporter covering that horrible tragedy and has written about it as we approach that 10th anniversary in a new book called Katrina After the Flood. Gary Rivlin, welcome to the Big 550.
Thank you, Paul.
I'm sure that when you were down there covering the story for the New York Times, you encountered stories not too dissimilar from that.
There was desperation all over the city. The 911 system was overwhelmed. Police were overwhelmed. Everyone was overwhelmed. We all saw on national TV, the Globe saw it on TV, that the federal government, the responders, were overwhelmed. I find what's most amazing, even the people who got out were able to walk to a shelter. It wasn't until day 5. The city flooded on a Monday morning. It wasn't until Friday morning that the buses showed up to take them out of the city. It wasn't until day 6 that another 20,000 people started to be evacuated from the convention center. There were no water, no food, no medical supplies, just desperate people. It was stark, and a lot of people have memories. That was very moving from your reporter friend, but that's a very common tale.
So how's the city doing now, a decade later?
Depends on who you ask and where you live. From a tourist point of view, from the point of view of most people out there listening who might consider going to New Orleans is doing great. The advantage of having 80% of your city underwater is that much of it is new. There was a lot of FEMA money spent to replace ruined police stations and ruined roads and ruined libraries. And there's kind of a new energy in New Orleans. A lot of people discovered New Orleans after Katrina. There's roughly 40,000, 50,000 newcomers, people who did not live there before the storm, who are there, and they tend to be younger with a college education. There's more restaurants than ever, even though there's still 20% less population. And there's a real vibrancy there. you know, the flip side of the story is, what is it like to live there? And, you know, the city's a long way from a full recovery, even though it's a decade later. And there's a real big racial component, too. There's 100,000 less African-Americans living in New Orleans today than there were at the time of Katrina, when the city had only 455,000 people. You know, you look at black middle-class neighborhoods, you look at black working-class neighborhoods, you even look at black professional-class neighborhoods, and they're still not back. You got the Lower Ninth Ward, which, you know, became the icon for the suffering of people in New Orleans. And, you know, it's one-third of the population is back 10 years later. So there's a long way to go, at least in the residential parts of New Orleans.
I was in New Orleans for the first time just a year and a half ago. But as a tourist, of course, I was in the French Quarter area, which was largely unaffected by it. There was some water, but not nearly the sum of water that was in the Lower Ninth Ward and elsewhere, and even all the way out to the coast, where people were so severely displaced. But in those places, particularly outside of the nearly untouched French Quarter, etc., when you say that there are people coming back and they are they rebuilding outside of the untouched areas?
There was this moment early on when you weren't sure if much of New Orleans was coming back. You had the Speaker of the House at the time, Dennis Hastert, saying most of that place should be bulldozed, meaning New Orleans. Mm. And there was an open debate in the city. There was a panel, Mayor Ray Nagin at the time, named the panel, what should we do? Funds are limited. Half of our city lies below sea level. Should we rebuild the lowest lying neighborhoods? And there was an open debate about that, and there was some people saying no, but in the end they decided to make no decision, and people were free to rebuild where they wanted. And so it depended largely on, well, how much wealth did people have? Did they have enough insurance coverage? Did they have enough of in savings, family wealth, to rebuild or not? And of course, there's been a wealth gap in this country forever between black and white.
Yep.
And there's also, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
Well, there's also a program, Road Home, it was called, the largest federal housing recovery program in the history of this country, $10.5 billion. And it sounded perfect. Like, let's make people whole up to $150,000. So, you know, you had a $300,000 home, you had $200,000 worth of insurance, we'll give you $100,000 to make you whole. The problem with that is it wasn't based on how much it would cost to rebuild. It was based on how much the assessed value of your home is worth. And historically, a 2,000-square-foot home in a white community is worth a lot more than the same home in a black community.
Yep.
And so I used in my book two neighborhoods, one on one side of City Park, the big park there, and one on the other. And in the white community, the average home, 2,000 square foot, is about $300,000. And so people had $300,000 through insurance in this Road Home program to rebuild. Same house on the other side in Gentilly, a black middle-class neighborhood, that home would be worth about $150,000. So that person had $150,000 to rebuild. Well, sheetrock costs what sheetrock costs, a roofer costs what a roofer costs. And so there were so many people in the black half of town that fell short and did not have the money to rebuild. And that to me is the great tragedy. There was this wonderful program, $10 billion, that's a lot of money, and it just had a tragic flaw, and there was a lawsuit filed a couple of years into it saying this is discriminatory, and the judge said, yeah, you're right, but by that time there was less than $200 million left.
Wow. Speaking of the racial components left in the path of Hurricane Katrina, Ray Nagin was the African-American mayor of that city, who said this is a chocolate city and will always be a chocolate city, although you point out it's 100,000 people less chocolate than it was before. Not only that, but didn't the racial politics of that city lead to a new mayor who was white and a lot more whites on the city council? And if so, what did that do to the city as it moved forward?
So it was New Orleans' great misfortune to have a neophyte as mayor with Ray Nagin. He had never held political office. He was in over his head. The truth is, Chocolate City, I don't know if it was deliberate or not, but it signaled to black New Orleanians, I mean, it was so well covered, that I've got your back. The truth of Ray Nagin is he was elected with 85% or so of the white vote and very little of the black vote. He was the white business community candidate. Well, after Katrina, they saw firsthand that he was in over his head. They rejected him and went to a different candidate. He had to do something. And, he talks about chocolate. He's going to make it Chocolate City, i.e., I've got your back, black New Orleans. And, he got 85% or so of the black vote that time and very little of the white vote. I joked that everyone voted for him, just not at the same time. And so, but he was reelected, and pretty much nothing happened. It was these 4 years. I mean, some of this FEMA takes a long time, federal government takes a long time, but a lot of it was he was not exactly a man of action. And then you had Mitch Landrieu, the current mayor, come in, and he was. He was lieutenant governor. He had served for a lot of years, and he came in with a renewed energy. But what made the whole thing distasteful is that if you were a black homeowner, you were 3.5 times more likely to lose your home than if you were a white homeowner. And so New Orleans, especially in 2010, this is 5 years ago, was a much whiter city than it had been. So a white mayor, well, he had the experience. Let's not look at race. He really had a confidence level that everybody appreciated. In fact, he won a majority of black and white. The problem was that the city council, which had been majority black, went a supermajority white. You lost the white, it became a white prosecutor. A white board was running the schools. A white board was running public housing. It was a white police chief. It was just across the board that suddenly it looked like there had been a takeover, because everybody, virtually everybody in the position of power was white.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I keep hearing when people talk about Hurricane Katrina in retrospect was, that was a natural disaster, that nature devastated that city. Do you think when they say that they're placing blame properly?
Yeah, I mean, don't call it a natural disaster in front of anyone in New Orleans because you're going to get an argument. Because in New Orleans, they're looking not at the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. They're looking at the 10th anniversary of the flood that followed Hurricane Katrina. Yep. If there had just been a hurricane in New Orleans, we wouldn't be on the phone talking about New Orleans now. There is modest damage to the city. The problem was the failure of the levee system, a man-made levee system built by the U.S. Army Corps of Army Engineers, U.S. Corps of Engineers. And the head of the Corps, judges, scientific teams have all admitted that it was an engineering disaster. One scientist, UC Berkeley professor, who headed up co-headed up one of the teams looking into this, called it the worst engineering disaster since Chernobyl. Mistakes were made. Specifications were not met. There were levee walls built on sand and broken shells, which is like building a levee protection system on Jell-O. And so in New Orleans, they consider it a man-made disaster because it wasn't the hurricane, the natural occurrence that did in their city, that flooded 80% of their city, but the collapse of half of a 350-mile flood protection system.
Now, here in St. Louis, we know a little bit about floods, having gone through one in 1993 that devastated a large part of our region. And since then, the levees have been rebuilt from 100-year levees to what were called 500-year levees. Have the levees in New Orleans been repaired the same way?
Not quite the same way. People in New Orleans are fairly happy with their flood protection system. The federal government spent just under $15 billion rebuilding the levees. But it's still rated for closer to a 100-year storm than a 500-year storm. The way I look at it, it's kind of a Cadillac system when they wanted the Rolls-Royce system that apparently St. Louis got. But, there's the flood protection system in place now is far superior to one that they had at the time of Katrina. The issue to me is more loss of the coastal wetlands. The wetlands serve as a natural buffer against the storm surge that a hurricane causes. And what Southern Louisiana has seen in the past decades is the loss of coastal wetlands. So in part, Katrina happened, or the flooding happened, because they've lost so much wetlands south of New Orleans that since the 1930s that it equals the size of Delaware. They've lost about one-third of the wetlands. So now there's been a big push to, like, A, stop losing the wetlands, and is there a way we can replenish it? But there's no better storm surge protection system than the coastal wetlands.
I've only got about 30 seconds left here, Gary. I'm curious what the rest of the Louisiana coast, not including the wetlands, but the rest of the people who were in places like, I don't know, Bay St. Louis, Mississippi was affected, et cetera. Has the rest of that been rebuilt, or is that still a work in progress?
You know, I was so New Orleans focused that I have a sense that things are mostly back there, but I'm not sure guests are talking about that. I just want to look at New Orleans and New Orleans only.
Yeah, well, you've got a lot to cover there, and you do it in the book called Katrina After the Flood. The author is Gary Rivlin. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Remarkable to look back on that, and if you see any of the footage, and you will on TV in a couple of weeks when we get to the actual anniversary, and you remember the horrors of the Superdome and the Convention Center and the floods all around that town, horrible to look back on it as American tragedy.